Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take the sources you send us, dive deep, and basically help make complex topics clear.
Fast-tracking understanding, you could say.
Exactly. And today, we've got a really interesting source, a slide deck from Professor Ivo Dinoff at the University of Michigan. It's recent, May 2025, titled Brain AI.
Yeah, and the listener who sent this in was really curious about how researchers are looking at the brain on, well, completely different size scales.
Right, from the incredibly small to the, whole brain networks. So that's our mission. Explore this multi-scale approach and see how AI fits in, how it's helping connect everything.
It's a fascinating angle because traditionally these scales were often studied separately, but the lecture really pushes this idea of integration. Understanding how, say, tiny quantum effects might eventually influence large-scale brain function. And, well, AI seems to be the key to bridging those gaps.
Okay, let's dive in then. Starting at the very, very bottom, the quantum scale.
Mm.
We're talking atoms, ions, dimensions like 10-year meters. It almost sounds, well, philosophical when thinking about brain activity.
It does seem incredibly small, almost unrelated at first glance. But the lecture introduces this concept, chime phase representations.
Chime phase.
Yeah. So imagine you're measuring something at that quantum level. It's inherently fuzzy, right? There's variability.
Okay.
Chime phase is basically a mathematical way to capture that fuzziness, that randomness, when you take repeated measurements over time and space. It's not just one value, but a sort of distribution of possibilities.
So it acknowledges the inherent uncertainty down there.
Yeah.
How do they visualize that? The slides had something about colored dots, green, red, blue.
Right. That's a simulation example. Imagine focusing on one tiny spot.
Yeah.
You take lots of measurements over time. These are the dots. Their distance from the center, the magnitude, represents time passing. But their angle, the phase, represents that random sampling, that inherent quantum variability. So instead of a line, you get this kind of dynamic cloud.
A cloud of probabilities over time, sort of?
Kind of, yeah. It captures more than just a simple average value. And then this gets even more abstract. The lecture talks about transforming standard time series data.
Like from an fMRI or EEG?
Exactly. Transforming that data into chime surfaces living in a 5D space-chime manifold.
Wow, okay. 5D space-chime manifold at a definitely sounds complex. What does that achieve?
Well, think of your standard time series as just a line. A chime surface essentially takes that line and inflates it, adds dimensions.
Right.
These extra dimensions encode not just time, but also space. And crucially, that chime phase, that variability we talked about, it turns a flat line into a richer, higher dimensional object.
And you need special tools to work with these chime surfaces.
You do. They mention chime phase aggregating operators to create the surfaces, and then space chime analytics to actually analyze them, model them, maybe even predict how they'll change.
Right. And there was a concrete example, wasn't there? Finger tapping fMRI data. That sounds like a mountain of data.
Oh, it's huge. 64 by 64 by 40 voxels times 160 time points. Massive.
So how does chime phase help with something like that?
Well, instead of just seeing if a voxel is on or off over time, they convert those signals into chime surfaces. This lets them do more sophisticated things, like actually forecasting the dynamics within a single voxel over time.
Forecasting? Like predicting future activity?
Yeah, predicting its temporal evolution. And they can generate these 3D statistical maps showing significant, not just a single snapshot, but looking at changes across space and time together. It's a much deeper view than standard analysis.
Okay, that quantum level is intricate. Let's zoom out significantly now to the nanoscale. So 10 aero to 10 aero meters. What are we looking at here? Molecules, nanoparticles.
Exactly. Biomolecules, tiny cellular components, even engineered nanoscale devices, perhaps. And a key technique mentioned is cryotomography.
Cryotomography. Freezing things really fast.
Basically, yes. You flash freeze the sample so fast that ice crystals can't form and damage the structures. Then you use an electron microscope to take tilted images and computationally rebuild a really high-resolution 3D model.
So you get this incredibly detailed snapshot of the cell's internal machinery.
Pretty much in its near-native state. It's powerful.
And how does this nanoscale view connect upwards? The lecture mentioned brain atlases.
Right. Think of brain atlases not just as static maps, but as evolving databases. The Ohlone Brain Atlas Viewer is an example.
Yeah.
These atlases can integrate data from MRI, other imaging, but also potentially this super detailed cryotomography data. So the nanoscale structure informs our understanding of the larger architecture.
Like knowing the precise shape of a tiny gear helps understand the whole machine.
That's a good way to put it. The details matter for the bigger picture.
Okay, let's keep moving up. Microscale now. 10 aryo to 10 ohmmeters. This is the domain of neurons, glia, synapses, the actual circuits.
Yes, the cellular level and local circuits. And a workhorse technique here is confocal microscopy.
Confocal? How's that different from a regular microscope?
It uses lasers and pinholes to block out of focus light. So instead of a potentially blurry image, you get a sharp optical slice through the sample.
Oh, okay.
You can stack these slices to build a very detailed 3D reconstruction of cells and their internal structures, like the nucleus or synapses.
The lecture used cancer data as an example here, right? Walk us through that process.
Sure. Figure one laid it out. First, you prepare your samples, maybe treat some with a drug, then image them with the confocal microscope. That's step A.
Got it.
Then step B is computational. You segment out structures of interest like the cell nuclei, create 3D models, and extract features, size, shape, texture, etc.
So quantifying the visual information.
Exactly. And step C is the analysis using statistics or machine learning to see if the treatment caused significant changes in those features compared to the untreated controls.
And figure two showed some results, comparing normal nuclei to treated ones.
Precisely. You could visually see the reconstructed 3D shapes, but crucially, there were graphs showing quantitative changes, like the size of the nuclei over time with error bars and everything.
So you can measure the effect of the treatment very precisely at the cellular level.
Yes, it allows for that detailed quantitative comparison of cellular morphology.
Amazing. So we've gone from quantum fuzziness to cell shapes. Now, the macro scale, 10 ohmmeters and up, brain regions, big networks. This is more familiar territory, maybe.
This is where techniques like MRI, fMRI, EEG, MEG, PET scans come in the tools many people associate with brain imaging. The lecture mentions common neural imaging protocols and computational statistical mapping.
Standard brain scans, essentially.
Largely, yes. And it makes a useful distinction between invasive and non-invasive methods. Invasive might involve, say, electrode implants for functional recording in animals or examining tissue samples ex vivo after removal. Mostly research or specific clinical uses.
Right.
Non-invasive is what we use most often in humans. That includes structural scans like diffusion tensor imaging to map white matter tracts, angiography for blood vessels, spectroscopy for brain chemistry.
And the functional ones.
And functional non-invasive like fMRI, looking at blood flow changes related to activity, or EEG-MEG measuring electrical and magnetic fields directly.
Okay. So we have data pouring in from all these levels, quantum, nano, micro, macro. It's a lot. How on earth do we connect it all? This seems like the core challenge.
It absolutely is. And that's where the lecture pivots strongly towards neurodata integration and, crucially, AI. The sheer volume and complexity across these scales is just too much for manual analysis.
AI is the bridge builder.
Essentially, yes. AI algorithms, particularly deep learning, are proving adept at finding patterns and relationships within and between these different data types that we might completely miss otherwise.
There was a case study on brain tumors using AI.
Yes, a good practical example. They took MRI scans from 110 glioma patients, multiple types of MRI per patient, pre-contrast, LAOR, post-contrast.
Okay.
And they had expertly drawn masks showing exactly where the tumors were on the 2D images. The goal was to train an AI to replicate that expert segmentation.
So automating tumor detection or outlining?
Pretty much. But first, they did something important. Data augmentation.
Augmentation.
Yeah, creating more training data by modifying the existing images, flipping them, rotating, resizing slightly. This makes the AI model more robust, less sensitive to minor variations in how the scan looks. It learns the concept of a tumor better.
Ah, makes sense. Teach it variations. Mm-hmm. And the AI model itself was called a UNET.
A UNET architecture. It's a type of convolutional neural network often used for biomedical image segmentation. It has an encoding path to analyze the image features and a decoding path to reconstruct the output, the predicted tumor mask.
Input MRI, AI does its thing. Output is the tumor location.
That's the idea. Training it to go from input data to the correct segmentation.
There was another really compelling case study mentioned about aging normal and pathological, like MCI and dementia.
Right, a hugely important area. The challenge is modeling cognitive changes with age, and they have incredibly rich data. Clinical scores, genetics, 3D, and even 4D neuroimaging, meaning scans over time.
A longitudinal study.
Exactly. But the lecture points out a common limitation. Often, these data types, genetics, imaging, clinical tests are analyzed separately.
You look at genes, then you look at scans, then you look at memory scores independently.
Right. And you might miss the connections. The proposal is for a more holistic health analytics protocol.
Holistic meaning?
Meaning using AI to model the joint distribution of all the data together. How do genetic factors relate to changes in brain structure seen in scans, and how do both relate to cognitive decline over time?
Trying to see the whole interacting system.
Precisely. The goal is better understanding, leading to potentially better diagnosis, classification, maybe even predicting progression or response to treatment by looking at all the evidence collectively.
That sounds incredibly powerful, but also really computationally demanding.
Immensely, which is why AI is essential. And the lecture actually points to some live tools and demos from this SOCR group.
Oh, yeah, the web apps, like the pressure injury prediction model.
That one, yes, and others for visual analytics, quantitative AI, plus specific neuroscience demos for dimensionality reduction on large data sets and a brain viewer.
So people can actually interact with these kinds of tools and data online.
That seems to be the goal. They even included the SOCR motto, it's online and freely accessible, therefore it exists.
Huh. I like that. Open science in action.
Definitely seems to be the spirit. They provide links to publications, code on GitHub, the apps, tutorials, really encouraging exploration.
Well, this has been quite the journey from quantum weirdness at the smallest scales through molecules and cells up to whole brain networks.
And seeing how AI is becoming this indispensable tool for weaving it all together, it really paints a picture of neuroscience moving towards a much more integrated understanding.
It really does. It feels like we're on the cusp of connecting things in ways we couldn't before.
Absolutely. This multi-scale AI-driven approach feels like the future of the field.
So here's something to think about building on all this. As we get better and better at integrating data from these wildly different scales, quantum effects, cellular activity, network dynamics, all through AI, what kind of unexpected breakthroughs might emerge? Could this convergence give us fundamentally new insights into consciousness itself, or perhaps new ways to finally tackle complex neurological disorders?
That's the big question, isn't it? What happens when you can truly see the forest and the trees and maybe even the subatomic particles making up the leaves?
Definitely something to ponder. We really encourage everyone listening to check out the links from Professor Dinov's lecture if this sparked your curiosity. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Thank you.